I haven't got these lights, which is good news, given how difficult it is to get them up. But I have got a tricky thing, because I want to try, in just 5 minutes, to give you some optimism. You now know why those of us who work in housing get so pessimistic. But let's try the optimism. The good news is that we don't have a housing crisis because the Luftwaffe have just come over and bombed our housing. I was in Bristol this lunchtime, looking at various sites which have been built because of the bombing in this city, and because a report is coming out, I think, on Friday, about how Bristol is seeing rapid increases in inequality and the housing crisis of affordability in Bristol. We don't have a housing crisis because the Thames barrier has failed and there's been a very high sea surge in the North Sea and London has flooded. We have most of the stock we need. We have the sewer systems underneath it. We actually managed to build more rooms, not houses, but rooms between 2001 and 2011 than the influx of people. So we actually have more rooms in our housing stock in the UK per person than we've had before. It's just our inability to share it out. That is the problem, to have a decent way of controlling our housing. It would be harder if it was a problem of a tsunami, or you can go for all the tsunamis. We've managed to create the equivalent ourselves. It is becoming evident to a very large number of people, including very affluent people in very affluent parts of the country, that this is a problem. I was in Dorchester down in Dorset last week, talking to a group of 500 people of an average age of 75. And they were worried about housing because of their children and grandchildren in London. So if the most affluent are affected, you get to a point where people do begin to realise you're not all going to fund your pensions out of becoming buy-to-let landlords. It is not possible. It is also not that easy to be a buy-to-let landlord. So what do you need to do? You cannot solve it locally. Oxford City Council recently was quietly spiriting away money to try to build another 500 homes, hasn't built any for 15 years. Osborne stole the money about 3 weeks ago. You cannot solve this locally. You need to have a national government who wishes to solve it, but you can't have any old national government. You know, a new Labour government will refurbish the council stock, but they will not change the nature of the direction in which we're going. So you need to do things like put up somebody who doesn't want to be elected, get hundreds of thousands of people to join a party, manage to get an MP last minute to sign it. It was my MP, Andrew Smith, I think, might have been the last one, with 5 seconds to go. That's the kind of change you actually need. The other scenario is that we have to crash, and then any government, even this government, would have to do various things which it would find unpalatable. Don't underestimate how much a government can change and a party can change. Every single Conservative MP voted against the introduction of a minimum wage in 1997. We now have a Chancellor of the Exchequer who is going to introduce a minimum wage in a couple of years at a level which means that he will determine the income of a quarter of the population at work in this country. That's almost Stalinist. Incredible things can happen without actually having to get a government of people who have some common sense in. Anyway, what do you need to do very, very quickly? The first and most urgent thing to do is to change the law on assured short-hold tenancies. It is very, very easy to change the law on these tenancy agreements because they only last for a year. So all the existing contracts are null and void within 12 months. You change the law in the House of Commons and you suddenly got 3-year tenancies. I'd go for 5-year tenancies with people with children. You can't put up the rent during that time. And when and if there is a crash in prices, an order to a crash requires is a fall in sentiment. The only thing holding our housing market up is sentiment. When house prices cry and all those amateur buy-to-let landlords have to try to sell very, very quickly, as they did in Dublin, as they've done all over Europe, and this has happened before, the tenants are sitting tenants and they cannot be evicted. That's the first thing you do. It's got very bad very recently. There are now 250,000 children living in poverty in London who are in private rented accommodation, more than the poor children of London living in council and housing association stock. those children are being moved on average every 2 years. If you want to destroy in London schools, the way to do it is to move 250,000 children between schools every 2 years. So it's a very rapid problem that's emerged. The minute you change the law on the short-haul tenancies, you decrease the value of housing to profiteers. That's the beginning of house prices coming down. It's going to come down one way or another. House prices are going to fall. The longest it's going to take is 10 years, because in 10 years' time, all those university students, half of young women in Britain, who are going to have average debts of £57,000, come on the market as first-time buyers. So you can see the end. This is going to happen. The question is, are we going to manage it with more civility or less civility? That's the immediate thing you do. The second thing you need to do is to work out how to encourage people to move around in the stock so that we make better use of it. We have enough housing in this country for every family and every single person to live somewhere with a spare bedroom. That's how much we've got. You don't want to force anybody to move. But you don't want a situation in which it makes sense for people to sit in housing that is too large for them, which they cannot afford the heat, in which they are getting lonely. And we have an epidemic of loneliness as well at the same time. Falling house prices, hopefully steady, would encourage people to get out of large family houses that they're living in on their own. Because the longer you stay in it, the less money you can pass on to your children. Which is why it makes sense to start dealing with the private rented sector. In the flats I was in this lunchtime in Bristol, these were maisonettes, they were built for families, family of four. Now many of them are private rented, and you can see one young professional lives in the middle of Bristol. So four people can no longer live in that. This is part of our problem. But there are ways of doing this. You need to tell the Green Party that you cannot move people from the southeast of England to Newcastle in retirement. Newcastle is a lovely place to be, but it is not having to demolish housing, so you cannot have that. The Green Party need to understand that there needs to be some building, particularly of retirement apartments on the edges of the city, so that people can move locally out of family housing and still be near their friends. One of the good reasons why we have a housing crisis is that we're now living in the middle class, at least, until our 80s and early 90s. We have a housing stock which worked quite well when we conveniently died about 72 years of age. There's nothing wrong with the fact we're living to older age, but we have a lack of a stock for older people, including no stairs. You do not want stairs, which means you want apartments and not lifts, views. And finally, we need to build. And we need to build because population is rising. Rising population is a very, very good thing. It is very bad to be living somewhere where people are leaving. There are people coming, but we're going to have to build for people coming. Unless we decide to vote in a referendum to say that people can't come anymore as easily. Although even that, being optimistic, is a way of solving the housing crisis. I mean, if you really want a very, very rapid collapse in the housing market in Britain, voting to prevent large numbers of people coming into the country, and also spending 18 months discussing how much you hate lots of people who are already here, is a very good way of engineering that housing crisis. It is all solvable. It is now affecting the middle and upper middle classes. Yeah. It's a very tiny number of people who do well out of it. Mm. Most landlords do badly out of this, because most landlords are amateur landlords who own one or two properties, and they don't know how to do it. So they actually have, I get letters from landlords telling me what a bad time they have with their tenants. Yeah. You don't start trying to do something you don't know how to do. It's a small number of people who've done well after this. They are greedy, we've let them do it. The question is, are we stupid or are we very stupid? If we're just stupid, we'll begin to sort it out now and soon. John Healey is the Shadow Housing Minister, if you want to write to somebody. And John Healey is still in the Shadow Cabinet, thankfully. You know, that's one of the things that has to happen. The Shadow Cabinet has to hang together long enough. I do not know who the Cabinet Minister is for housing anymore, because I've lost any faith that they will do anything. If we're stupid, we will begin to sort this out. If we're very stupid, we will leave it and we will head back to the 1920s and the 90% private rented country. and we can head back to the majority of our children becoming servants for the affluent and living in bounty stands and getting the bus in when they're needed. We're not very stupid. We have been a bit stupid. But I do think we can begin to sort this out. We do have to recognise those of us who've got a mortgage or own outright, we don't actually have a nest egg, because it isn't worth the amount of money they tell us it's worth. Housing is currently valued at how much people who are desperate are buying for it right now. In Bristol, the housing explosion in London has finally hit Bristol now. It passed through Oxford about a year ago. It went through Chipping Norton about 6 months ago, and it's coming through now. People with fairly good
jobs...
You
have to stop, too.
I will stop. People with fairly good jobs in Bristol who are renting are desperately buying because they're worried they won't be able to afford the rent. That is exactly what happened in 1989 when we went up to our last mini house price crash. Thank you.
I'm officially the worst chair ever because I let everybody overrun. So I'm going to go to questions straight away. Who has a question? Here, you can start and then I'll... So there's a gentleman here, another gentleman here, and... Well, let's take... Oh, and a lady over there. Yeah.
I'm an architect and I lost the battle in trying to stop my clan, the city council, to demolish... a really decent block in Barton Hill of mezzanettes, in very much in the GLC and the LCC type of design. It was demolished, and a huge amount of car in breast carbon lost. Mm. It could have been rescued. We did a scheme to show how it could be improved, but its political lack of understanding, a lack of will and susceptibility to being frightened by these persuaders for developers and others, that you can cure a social crisis by demolishing decent architecture. And I was very, very hurt and unhappy, having worked very hard, but there was lack of... It was the Labour Council then. Mm. Lack of understanding, lack of logic coming into play. And what can we do to actually stiffen up the prevention of what Kate McIntosh has explained so well in that estate, which is a brilliant piece of work.
Thank you. Perfect.
Can I just point out that the council that you've been dealing with, never underestimate the incompetence of local authorities.
Yeah, no, that is good advice.
I'll ask my question now.
Yes.
Yeah. Michael mentioned, one of his last slides showed something about TTIP having an impact, and I'm interested to know exactly what that impact is, TTIP being something that concerns me greatly.
Lovely, thank you. And over there,
One quick observation. I was lucky enough to move as a baby into a brand new council house in 1951, and I've always just thought that was gave my parents so much pleasure to move their kids into a brand new council house, really well built with a lovely garden. I myself was moved into as a single parent into a housing association house in the 1980s. And the joy it gives people and the stability it gives people to be actually housed in decent housing, paying a rent, knowing your repairs are going to be done, it makes so much sense.
Lovely. Thank you. And I'm going to take that one behind you and then we're going to go back to the panel.
I'd like to ask Danny Dorling why he wants the Green Party to stop persuading people to move to Newcastle. I think this probably goes back to Norman Tebbit saying get on your bike if you want a job. And all that happens is the South East and London gets vastly overheated. It's not just house numbers, it's water, it's roads, it's trains, it's absolutely everything. And what is desperately needed in the North is investment. They've got the houses, the Pathfinder business was appalling, but there are still sound houses there. They're capable of rescue, but what they don't have is employment. They need investment. And actually, devolution, there's another debate going on somewhere, is not going to do it. It's wicked, taking tax money that can be redistributed and just giving it to Kensington and Chelsea.
Thank you. Kate, so can we go to you for the stiffening up of protections?
Yes. Well, under the present regime, despite Danny's optimism that governments are capable of change, I am rather pessimistic until we have a sea change in party. But there is one issue that I failed to mention, which is absolutely key to this new build versus renovation and upgrade, and that is VAT. It is absolutely absurd, beyond logic, but unless, of course, you think about the political logic, that new build housing is totally exempt from VAT, and that upgrades and repairs and renovations, with the exception only of certain items which are designed to reduce CO2 emissions, gets the full 20% WACC. Now, 20% WACC is a huge incentive for demolition. Mm. You don't need to look any further, really. There are lots of other reasons. But of course, the construction lobby, which is very powerful, would much rather deal with a cleared site. It's much less complicated, much more predictable, and Bob's your uncle.
Lovely, thank you. Yeah. Michael, TTIP.
Yes, I didn't have time to talk about it, but this is the transatlantic trade and investment negotiations that are going on between the European Union and the United States of America, and parallel similar things going on between the USA and Canada and in the Pacific. And these are essentially, we can't know exactly because it's all being done in secret and we can't see the documents, but it's pretty clear from leaks that what is being done essentially is to try to prevent national governments any longer having the power to pass laws which could adversely affect the interests of international investors, so that governments would be prevented from, for example, stopping the privatization of a particular sector of the economy or renationalizing it. Mm. Or taking steps which would reduce the profitability of investments already embedded in the system. And the opposition to this is quite strong in many parts of the world, I'm glad to say. It's difficult because of the secrecy. The European Parliament has people in it who are trying to oppose it, but the European Commission and the Council of Ministers seems to be really behind it. And we haven't managed to get it really onto the UK local political agenda. Most of the resistance at the moment is from people concerned for the survival of the National Health Service, where it could wreak absolute havoc by protecting international investors who buy bits of the NHS. But it could have major effects in the housing field because, for example, it could well be invoked to prevent rent controls being applied, the kind of thing Danny mentioned about adding to the security of tenure of private renters, putting rent controls on private renting, or acquiring land at existing use value rather than speculative hope value to do housing developments or new towns. All these things could be ruled out. So opposing that is a very important thing.
What's it called again? TTIP. TTIP, it's all capitalised.
Transatlantic
Trade Investment
Partnership.
Something like that. Danny.
Okay. The Green
Newcastle.
Newcastle and the Greens. I lived in Newcastle for 10 years. The Green Party policy made sense in the 1990s, because in the 1990s, Newcastle was losing population. Glasgow demolished 15% of its stock between 91 and 2001, the housing in the city. That all ended after 2001. Every part of Britain has actually seen a population increase. Scotland, the population is going up. It's one effect of immigration. So we're no longer wasting property. It's also an effect of, I mean, Stoke isn't even suffering because we are socially cleansing people from London to Stoke. But, you know, people are in Stoke. So there is no longer parts of the country being demolished. You get into demolition in London so that speculators can make money on these estates. That's where most of the demolition is now. If our population carries on rising, we're going to have to build somewhere. And there are many good reasons to say you might want to build in the north of Wales, mountains apart from anything else, and somewhere to go. However, if you want a Freiburg in Britain, where's the most likely place you're going to get a Freiburg? This is an extension of a city where people cycle and don't use cars. And I'll do it, it's around Oxford. Oxford, we have land within 2 miles of the city centre, which is not built on, which has nothing special about it at all. We could build within 3 miles of the middle of the city centre using the legislation that was used for Milton Keynes, without car parking spaces, with cycle lanes. Oxford is the most likely place you could do a green city in Britain. You could use this legislation to buy the land at use value, which is agricultural, which is tiny, off the owner. The owner, in most cases, is one of the 6 landed colleges of my university, not my college. They're not in any financial trouble, these owners. So that's why I would look at building down here. I'd look at building up above tube stations in London. London is the most low-density megacity in the world. It was the largest city in the world 100 years ago. It's now the 25th largest. Or you can say, we don't want this country to carry on growing in population. There are lots of reasons to welcome the growth in population. One thing, if you're worried about the environment, is that when people move from an area where they have more children to an area with less children, they tend to have less children themselves. So if you want a world with a smaller population, you want to encourage migration, but you also want to encourage people to live in a way which doesn't rely on cars. And that requires allowing them to have spaces to live near where they want to work and study. In my city now, 40,000 people drive over the Greenbelt every day to park in giant car parks on the edge. It's hard to think of a more ungreen thing you can do than defend a green belt that results in 40,000 car journeys a day.
I'm not sure this is an argument against Newcastle, though.
No. But Newcastle is doing pretty well. I mean, the sad thing in Newcastle is it demolished the areas I lived in, Benwell and Fenham. You go back, they've gone. But Newcastle's population is fine.
Okay.
You don't want to do much, you know, you want to have jobs in these areas, but you can't decant people hundreds of miles away from their families. People really do want to stay around where their families and their friends are.
Okay, I'm going to go to some more questions. That super quick gentleman in the back. Anybody? Oh, here's one, and there's one too. So you at the front, and you with the phone. Not that you're checking your messages. Nobody thinks that.
Hi there. My name's Jackson. Fantastic sort of set of doom and gloom, really, about housing in future cities. I just wanted to throw a bit of optimism, if that's possible. And Kate, thank you so much for sort of mentioning Vauban in Freiburg. You know, anyone that's been interested in housing has seen that probably the most exciting and empowering communities that we've seen around the world have been where the end user has been involved in the design and delivery of those homes. And what is a shame with that hasn't come out yet, but I think needs to be part of future cities, is where we remove the profit motive in delivering housing and where we bring communities in. So there's great models like community land trusts, cooperatives like the Lilac model in Leeds, where you've got like mutual housing ownership. So I'd really like maybe a touch from you guys how we can see more people-led housing delivering within a city context.
Lovely, thank you.
Thanks, Alex Marsh, University of Bristol. So it follows up on that slightly, I guess, going back to something Michael said and sort of connecting out from the housing system. I guess in the background of this is this issue of assets and asset investment. It seems to be one of the challenges is to think about if we're going to move the housing system onto a different basis, people investing in other types of assets or doing other things with their money. You mentioned about pensions now being, you know, not worth investing in. Until you can crack that, I think it's persuading people it's in their interest to think about housing in different ways, especially in the context where the state social care is declining. You know, I might have to pay for my own care. I've got to preserve the value of this. At the moment, housing is the only thing that delivers it. So connecting outwards to the rest of the financial system seems to me a big part of the picture.
That's a very good point.
Hi, Ian Barrett, Sustrans. Local councils are consulting on building 85,000 new houses across the Bristol-Bartlett region in the next 20 years. We're told that's because people need more space and you can't solve distribution problems. What's the solution?
Wow, this is getting really thorny. Okay, Anna, do you want to do profit motives?
Yeah, I mean, I think it taps into a wider issue that I know that Michael and I have actually talked about the whole notion of the public interest and where the public interest fits within housing and planning. And actually what we've seen over the last sort of 30 years, basically, is that that idea of the public interest has been taken out of the planning system. The planning system has completely changed. It's driven pretty much 99% by economic regeneration imperatives. And actually you've seen that reflected in legislation. So legislation in the post-war period was full of references to public benefit and the public good and the public interest. You can see it in all the acts of Parliament. And actually that has been taken out and it's been replaced with economic benefit rather than public benefit. And actually the same thing has happened over in the US. Where there was a Supreme Court case where economic benefit replaced public benefit in a contentious judgment over development, and it led the news bulletins, protesters camped on the White House lawn. It was George Bush was president. He actually intervened in the issue, and lots of states revoked that law, and public benefit was put back into planning legislation. That debate has never, ever been had here. Mm. And I think that is an important issue to get out there and to campaign over. And I'd say more widely, with regard to changing, you know, can we change government? Is the Labour opposition actually going to provide a voice for these issues? Well, I don't think they are unless we make sure that the issues are on the agenda and that they're called out on a series of campaigning issues, like VAT at 20%, which is basically saying to developers, demolish, like issues around the public interest.
Michael, when you look at the proportion of tangible assets that is accounted for by housing, do you think that's reaching a tipping point and we're bound to change, or do you think it's so entrenched and there are so many vested interests that it's going to be very difficult to understand housing as other than a public vehicle?
I think it's very entrenched and it's going to take some major measures to bring it back to a saner level. But rather, as Danny Dorling was saying, I mean, there are lots of things that can be done, things you can do to the tax system, to make other kinds of investments and savings media, it's your point, more attractive, more appealing. Privileges which you get from investing in housing and land and real estate, the tax exemptions, the death duty exemptions, the capital gains tax exemptions, all this stuff, all of those need to be rethought and changed.
But do you think
so
those levers
could be
enough?
Done slowly and gradually? I don't think it has to be done through an absolute catastrophic crash, which would bring the whole financial system down. That might happen quite easily, but I don't think it's necessary.
Are you in favour of radical or incremental change?
I would just point to Scotland. Scotland has its own independent legal system, and they have abolished right to buy, and they have a commitment to care for people in their old age. I'm thinking of emigrating. returning home.
And the Sustrans point. Do you have a view on the Sustrans point?
Yeah, no, it's. I always have a view. See many views. It does depend on what's going to happen with population numbers. I mean, the county I'm in, it's 100,000, and what's currently happening is that they're being built around villages that are protesting like anything to stop these houses being built. I agree with these villages. I would protest because nobody with children is going to be able to afford those houses, so you won't get the village school back again. You'll just get more cases. But I do think these people are going to come, because if I could show you one graph, it would be the long-term immigration graph since the 1950s. It is going up and up because of the English language and other things. If you make people more precarious in the whole of Europe and elsewhere, you would end up with more and more people coming to where they speak their second language. And it's not the only thing going for us. We happen to be more tolerant than people in many other countries. Well, amazingly. Yeah. Well, particularly in London.
For long.
In London, where you don't have any BNP members. So I think we do have to plan for those numbers, but you then want them located where you do not have to have a car, because there is no way we can fit more cars in. Road protesters quite like the idea. It might be happening near you and it would work, but near me, there are suggestions being made for building new motorways. Now, if you really want to give young people something to do, building new motorways near the source of where road protesters live is a great way of doing it. But I would go for expansion, but you do it in a way that means people can walk and cycle to work. 50% of people in the Netherlands walk or cycle to work. 25% of pensioners in the Netherlands cycle. In the UK, it's 1% of pensioners who cycle. In the USA,
it's him.
Well done. in the USA, only 3.5% of the population walk or cycle to work. Mm. It's our choice. But that's what we need. And why on earth can't we ally ourselves with the villagers who are so much trying to stop these houses being built, but they never get together and say where they would like them being built, which is on the edge of existing settlements.
That's true. We're out of time, but I want to ask the panel to give one thing that you would campaign for or against in this time of political flux that you think you could actually get into somebody's manifesto.
Well, I'm not going to answer that, but I'm going to answer something else.
That's
the
fine.
Single most important thing, I think, and it goes back to a very early question about how do we change the way people think about this, is that it's all our responsibility is to point out when the emperor has no clothes. Mm-hmm. You know, we are all that child whose job it is to say that the emperor has no clothes, whether that's the minister or a Labour councillor or a Tory councillor or whoever it is. Mm. There are other kinds of common sense than the prevailing one, and it's our job to disseminate and argue that common sense is wrong and common sense, other kinds of common sense are available and should prevail.
Lovely.
Yeah.
Perfect.
My main point.
Anna.
Yeah, I totally endorse what Michael said. I would campaign, I know I'm in Bristol, but I would campaign against the blanket demolition of housing estates in London because it's a complete scandal. A lady at the back mentioned Pathfinder and the demolition of tens of thousands of homes across the north of England. This is the same, but it is actually worse because there isn't even the tenuous justification that there was for that policy. I'd campaign for that. And we have a mayoral election coming up in London. Allegedly, housing is the central issue. Well, these things have to be at the forefront and we have to force them onto the table because I don't know that Sadiq Khan, for example, is going to come out against this sort of thing.
Okay, lovely. Kate?
Land value taxation.
Of course, we didn't even get that.
It would stop land banking overnight. That's 45% of London developable sites that I mentioned that's just sitting there idle. Meanwhile, they're forcing the boroughs to demolish perfectly good housing, which is only suffering from their neglect. Habitable housing that people want to continue to live in. It would stop the London just being used as a banker's vault in property terms.
Lovely, thank you. And Danny, really quickly.
Very quickly. Similar, we have a Shadow Chancellor who's in favour of land value taxation. Winston Churchill was in favour of it. It raises an enormous amount of money at a time you need to raise an enormous amount of money. Otherwise, you've got to cut people. And all those overseas buyers who've bought that property in London and some in Bristol, they can't ship it out. You can actually begin to tax them and raise money. And on the way to land value taxation, add council tax bans.
Of course.
So the mayor, I don't know where your mayor lives, but I suspect he's got a quite nice house.
Several.
Yep. So why isn't he paying?
I think he's in the building.
So why isn't he paying a fair amount of tax? New York has flat property taxes. We have the lowest property taxes in the world. We've got to either make further cuts or raise taxation to balance our books eventually. The easiest thing to tax is property.
You have to stop. On that note, thanks everybody. Thanks for coming.